Hello, and welcome to the Net Zero Investor podcast. I'm Atharva Deshmukh, the head of research for Net Zero Investor. In today's episode, we will talk about carbon footprints. We will discuss how this metric informs investment analysis and what the limitations are. Joining us today is David Russell. David is chair of the Transition Pathway Initiative, an organization that was established by a group of asset owners back in 2017 to provide independent assessments of how companies are transitioning in line with the Paris Agreement. TPI is currently supported by 153 investors with over $80 trillion in assets under management and advice. Prior to his role at TPI, David was the head of responsible investment at University Superannuation Scheme, a large UK pension fund. So David, thank you for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So carbon footprints, let's dig in. Put very simply, carbon footprints are the total greenhouse gas emissions expressed in CO2 equivalent attributable to companies, assets, or products. So everything from an internal combustion engine in a car to the company that manufactures that engine and the company that supplies the fuel it runs on has a carbon footprint. Now, interestingly, the concept has a bit of a controversial history. It was popularized through an advertisement campaign by British Petroleum in the early 2000s that asked individuals about their carbon footprint. BP even released a calculator to help individuals measure this. To critics who called it a, quote, successful deceptive PR campaign, the campaign was trying to push the narrative that our individual carbon footprints are primarily responsible for global warming. Today, the focus of carbon footprints is largely on companies. So, David, to kickstart our conversation today, looking back from an initial focus on individual carbon footprints to today's discussions about corporate carbon footprints, could you help us understand how we got here?
Sure, and I should have said thank you for asking me to participate in this. Maybe controversial, but I actually do think PP has a point here. In the end, carbon footprints of individuals, companies, countries are based on who's using and causing the emissions of carbon. And at the end of the chain, there are individuals who drive cars, who choose to fly, who have beef instead of soya beans as their main staple. So there are individual choices that drive carbon emissions. But my main role as an investor and representing investor organizations is to think about it from an investment perspective and how companies and the assets that pension funds and asset managers, investment managers invest in and the carbon footprints that they have. And I think it's worth taking a step back because the issue around climate change and how investors think about it started to evolve in the early noughties when BP made its statements around carbon footprinting. And it took a while for investors, firstly, to realize climate change was an issue, and then secondly, to start thinking about what to do about it. And I think that's when investors started thinking about carbon footprinting as one of the tools that they could be using.
So when it comes to footprinting, we have metrics and some accounting methodologies that have evolved over time. And so too has, as you said, the attention that investors pay to these metrics. So in your view, how has asset owners' attention to carbon footprints changed over time?
I think it's really evolved. From my personal perspective, when I was at USS, we did our first carbon footprint in 2009, so quite early in the cycle. And that was driven by an internal drive to understand where the fund's exposure was in its equity portfolio, in fact, in its public equity portfolio, where the potential risks of high carbon exposure could be within that portfolio. And I think that was the evolution of carbon footprinting techniques was really focused on equities at that time. I think it changed over time. One of the next rounds of carbon footprinting that USS did was in 2015-16, where we moved away from just looking at public equities to looking at, okay, we don't just invest in public equities as a pension fund. We invest in all sorts of assets. What are the carbon footprints associated with those assets? And we worked with a major service provider to develop processes and, in fact, talked to a number of other pension funds around the results of that process and how we could improve carbon footprinting as a tool for investors to understand their exposure. We, in fact, published a report called If Carbon Footprinting is the Answer, What is the Question? And you could find that online if you want to look it up, because the results of the process were not always satisfactory because the methodologies were still evolving. I think we're in a different place now. I think methodologies for non-public equity assets, so private assets, credit and sovereign debt, have evolved a lot, but it's taken a long time to get there, from 15 years from when USS started this. So I think it is evolving, the methodology is evolving, the understanding of the value or limitations of carbon footprint have also evolved over that time.
Right, so that brings me to my next question. As you said, from an investor's perspective, there are some limitations, and your take on this has been that instead of carbon footprints, the focus should be on how assets are or are not transitioning. Could you explain that? Why is the focus on carbon footprints not always helpful?
I think it's worth understanding how the data are collected for carbon footprint. And I'll talk about the equity side, because that's where most of the data are available. Public listed companies are more likely to provide information that the data providers can use to do carbon footprinting. So when you look at carbon reporting, you're looking at data that the company may have published last year or the year before. And by the time the annual report is published and it's been processed through the data provider, the data could be 2 or 3 years out of date, and it's backward looking. It just tells you what the carbon footprint was then. It doesn't tell you where the company is going or how it's going to transition. I think one of the other weaknesses is that it tells you something that you should already know. Carbon footprints are related to the processes and industries that you invest in. So if you do a carbon footprint of a typical public equity portfolio, firstly, the vast majority of the emissions, it's an 80-20 rule. The vast majority of the emissions will be with a relatively small number of companies, and those companies will be in the utility sector, the steel sector, the cement sector, the paper sector, those sectors, and sometimes the oil and gas sector, and sometimes the mining sector. It's the sectors that use the fossil fuels that cause the emissions, not necessarily the suppliers of fossil fuels. So you should already know what's in your portfolio. And if you've got cement and steel, you will know you've got carbon heavy footprint within that portfolio. So it doesn't really help you understand what to do. If you've got cement, okay, what do you do about it? And how are those companies managing their emissions? So I think that's where the switch of focus between, okay, carbon footprint serves you one set of data. How you use that as an investor is really important, because it's not enough just to know you've got these carbon-heavy assets in your portfolio. You have to think what you're going to do about it. And what are those assets doing to manage that carbon exposure? And that's where the transition point comes in. Understanding where companies are going to be is just as important as knowing, if not more important from an investment perspective, of knowing where they were.
So maybe it would help to illustrate that argument with an example. Could you give us an example of a case where there was a focus on carbon footprints and that was not very, let's say, useful?
So the one that always springs to my mind is the South African utility Eskom. Now, Eskom basically provides the vast majority of electricity generation for South Africa. It also uses coal. It is a vast user of coal and therefore a significant emitter of carbon. And when you do a carbon footprint, if you are looking at your portfolio and Eskom's in it, it is highly likely to be one of the biggest emitters. And I know this because USS did this and reported it in its TCFD reporting 2 or 3 years ago. Relatively small holding, causing a very significant carbon footprint. The easiest way for asset owners, asset managers to reduce carbon footprints is to sell carbon-heavy assets. And your carbon footprinting will help you identify those. The problem is that from a long-term perspective, just selling carbon-heavy assets doesn't get you to your target. And many pension funds have set net zero or Paris alignment targets by 2050. So just selling carbon-heavy assets, all that does is clean up your portfolio. It doesn't make any difference to the real world in terms of carbon emissions and how you are going to achieve your target. So the other challenge is that emerging markets like South Africa need investment to be able to transition. And if investors are withdrawing their capital because they don't want to invest in Eskom because it's got a carbon-heavy footprint, how is Eskom going to transition itself? And therefore, how is South Africa going to transition? And if you hold any South African asset, equity, or even the South African sovereign debt in your portfolio, you need Eskom to transition. So just focusing on a carbon footprint doesn't give you the tool you need to understand how Eskom is going to transition in the future, how that's going to affect South Africa, and how that might affect your ability to achieve your target net zero Paris alignment by 2050 over the long term. So it's a useful tool in some ways, but in other ways it doesn't help you get to the end point, which is actually climate change risk is reduced over the long term.
So now, if carbon footprints do not necessarily tell investors the whole story about an asset's transition, like you just mentioned, what does? What alternative metrics might be more useful in that regard?
I think there are a number out there, and obviously I have a certain bias here in that the Transition Pathway Initiative was specifically developed to help investors understand where companies were going by firstly developing conjunction with the London School of Economics, the TPI Centre at the London School of Economics, and FTSE Russell, who helped provide some of our data, transition pathways, sector-specific transition pathways between now, short, medium, and long term, how sectors should be transitioning. And sector, it's important to have sector-specific pathways because how the cement sector is going to transition is different from the steel sector, from the airline sector, from the oil and gas sector. So having sector-specific pathways against which company targets are assessed to see whether they are aligned with a transition to Paris alignment on net zero by 2050. And TPI does this analysis and makes it available on its website so that investors and others can use it to assess how companies are going to transition. So that's a forward-looking metric. There are other forward-looking metrics out there. Implied temperature rise is one that's recommended by the UK's pensions regulator. I actually think it's a really bad metric in many ways, because if you do an implied temperature rise of a portfolio now, it will tell you what the portfolio looks like now, which is a really bad number compared to where you need to be in 2050. And it's a really bad communicating tool. I don't think it's an appropriate thing for pension funds to do. I'm sure that will hopefully stimulate some discussion. You can also assess what proportion of your portfolio has set long-term targets or put in place transition plans. And that's another metric for measuring where companies are going. So there are more out there, but they're two or three. Which companies have science-based targets is another way of measuring that where companies are going. I think that there's a definite move away from just focusing on the carbon footprint, because as I said, all that does is tell you where you were, and it's a really blunt tool for understanding how companies are likely to be performing in the future, to these forward-looking metrics where we can hopefully see change. So the other thing you can do with these forward-looking metrics is track how companies are going. You can engage with them as asset owners, asset managers, to encourage them to put in place better targets and actually to achieve those targets, put in place transition plans, which we're seeing a lot more of. They're regulated for, or they will be regulated for in the UK and other markets around the world. So there's a lot more of that forward-looking work that will be out there. An evolution from where we were with just having carbon footprinting, which admittedly was only 7, 8, 9 years ago, there were no alternatives to it. There are those alternatives now, which I think investors are beginning to see that this is the way we should be moving.
So because we started our conversation by looking back, let's conclude it by looking ahead. As you just mentioned, there are alternative metrics out there and there are limitations to carbon footprinting. So in your view, what is the future of carbon footprint metrics? Do you see their use by investors decreasing over time, or will they always have a role to play?
I think they will always have a role to play, because in the end, you're doing two things. You're measuring where you are and then hopefully making decisions for where you want to be in the future. The measuring where you are piece is still important, and that's where the carbon footprinting comes in. It is a requirement within TCFD reporting. And in the UK, large pension funds and now asset managers and companies have to do TCFD reporting. So they have to report on their carbon footprint. And we've seen a lot of funds around the world reporting carbon footprinting as part of their TCFD reporting. So I think there will always be a role for carbon footprinting to play in understanding where you are as a measure point to track where you are going. There are other issues with that tracking as well, because many funds put in place absolute net zero Paris alignment. That's an absolute target, whereas the interim targets tend to be intensity based. So you're measuring your carbon intensity of your portfolio relative to the assets under management. And that's a variable number, depending not only on how much carbon is going into being emitted by the holdings, but also the value of the holdings. So that can go up and down as markets go up and down. And the underlying point there is also that your carbon footprint can go up because your assets numbers might go up and therefore your investments go up, even if your intensity goes down. So your absolute footprint can still go up. But I do think that there's a role to play for carbon footprinting. But as an aid to investment, I think the more forward-looking metrics have a much stronger role to play. And I think investors are looking at that, not just in how they integrate that into investment processes, whether that's decision-making or stewardship, but you're also seeing more investors using passive approaches through indexing, which is tied to these forward-looking metrics like TPI.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. That was really interesting. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed, and thank you for listening and tuning in. And thank you, David, for joining us and sharing your insights. We appreciate your time.
Sure, I enjoyed it. Thank you.